Thanks, Audrey. And thank you all for staying. This is very impressive. So in that everybody would last this long. In 2011, NIOSH conducted a survey of over 12,000 healthcare practitioners to examine exposure control procedures in the healthcare industry. So this afternoon, Jim Boiano, the PI for this study, and I will be giving you a synopsis of what happened during this study and how we conducted it. I'll be talking about the study design, the selection of the population, and Jim will be talking about one of the key, what we call hazard modules, on the administration and compounding of anti-neoplastic drugs. So we're going to go over just, I am going to go over a number of things, as I said, the study design objectives and the targeted chemicals. So we had a threefold study objective. The first was to describe precautionary practices for limiting exposure to hazardous chemicals in the healthcare industry. These are chemicals that healthcare workers are routinely exposed to in their jobs. Secondly, we wanted to evaluate the use of personal protective equipment and the barriers to using PPE, as well as other advanced controls such as engineering controls. And then finally, we wanted to examine the adherence to these recommended guidelines. And these are not laws. These are recommendations for use of these chemicals and minimizing exposure to the chemical hazards of interest. So we started this study de novo, from scratch. And so there were many steps in order to facilitate this particular study. So we received funding from NIOSH under the National Occupational Research Agenda. You know, it's our internal funding competition. And then we started talking to our stakeholders. We held a number of stakeholder meetings that helped us identify the chemical hazards that we were targeting. Then we developed the survey content. We conducted cognitive testing and pilot testing of these survey modules, and then we launched the survey, performed the analysis, and right now we're communicating the findings through presentations. We're going to put the information up on our website, and then we have approximately, I think Jim was saying, we have probably 13 papers that are soon to come out in the next year. Many of them are out, but some are ready to go. So I'm going to talk to you about how we selected the chemical hazards. So we selected, in partnership with our consultants and partners, seven classes of chemicals. So it's not just one chemical, but seven classes of chemicals. And they included aerosolized medication, compounding and administration of anti-neoplastic drugs, chemical sterilants such as ethylene oxide and others or their substitutes, high-level disinfectants, and at the time of the study, glutaraldehyde was still being used, but it was being phased out for things like ortho-aldehyde and prussic acid. Surgical smoke, both from laser surgery as well as electrosurgical devices, and anesthetic gases, and there were a whole host of those. So our rationale for selecting these chemicals are that they were widely used in the healthcare setting, and they had authoritative recommendations and guidelines that were amenable to evaluating adherence to these guidelines. So again, there aren't rules like the bloodborne pathogen standard. They're just these are voluntary standards. We had also they were of interest to our stakeholders and also interest to NIOSH because we had research focus such as the hazardous drug standard, especially anti-neoplastic drugs. Developing the survey content was easier said than done. And we took a lot of time doing it. A lot of the survey questions came from standard questions. And then because others had not done evaluations of particular chemicals and looking at PPE barriers, et cetera, we had to make them up on our own and then also have them cognitively and pilot tested. So we had three types of modules. We had a screening module that identified who was who could participate in the study, the hazard modules. There were seven hazard modules. It was seven? Yeah. There were seven hazard modules that addressed each of these types and classes of chemicals, and we had a core module that gave us information about the respondents. So the screening module was a little more than just a screener, and we asked the people who came into the survey, and this was a web-based survey, whether or not they had used or were in close proximity to any of the chemicals that we were talking about during the 7 days prior to the study. Now, people may have been using them, but they also in the past, but they also may have been on vacation for the last 7 days. We wouldn't probably get them in the study. The screening module also identified how many hazard modules an individual would be participating in and which ones they would participate in. And then everybody was asked to do a hazard module first in terms of the order. They did a hazard module, and then they did the core module. If they identified a second hazard module, they would do that second. We only asked people to do two hazard modules because they took up to sometimes a half hour to complete. If they didn't qualify, we said thank you very much, and then they exited the survey. The topics that we asked about in the hazard module included a series of questions, and this is in each hazard module, questions on work practices, exposure controls that were in place, barriers to using these exposure controls, and the likelihood of exposure to the individual during their work day. Our core module, as I said, gave us information about the respondent and include demographics and descriptions of the types of places or facilities an individual worked in, whether it was a hospital or a standalone freestanding operatory or clinic, and also the numbers of employees that happened to be at that particular facility. In addition to asking them about the hazard modules, we also asked them about other exposures in their workplace, including workplace violence and psychosocial demands. And we also asked a few questions about, musculoskeletal disorders, and we even asked them whether or not they had had a flu vaccine that year, which was startling because I think in most part most of them had not, like 80% had not had a flu vaccine. But that was before all the hospitals start mandating that their healthcare workers be vaccinated or get flu vaccinations. So our target study population were members of 21 professional practice organizations, such as the ANA and the AORN. And these represented occupations that worked with the targeted chemicals, so that they had potential for exposure to these chemicals. These organizations were wonderful. They helped us develop the content of our questionnaires. They helped us test them and also involved in the implementation, and I'll talk to you about that in a second. So this is kind of, I hope you can see this, it is a little small, but on your left-hand side are the hazard modules. So these are the chemicals. The professional organizations from 1 to 21 are in the middle, and on the right-hand side are the targeted occupations. So on this slide, what I'm just trying to give you a handle, on the very top, you have one professional organization represented a respiratory therapist, and the respiratory therapists were exposed to aerosolized medication. And if you go down farther where the circle is, there were five professional organizations that represented a variety of healthcare occupations that were exposed to anesthetic gases. And these range from your anesthesia tech to your anesthesiologist. As I said before, we had a web-based survey. Participation was voluntary, anonymous, and non-incentivized. So we didn't give people anything to participate, and I'm amazed that we have 12,000 people participate, more that actually entered the survey. And how this worked was that we had a contractor, Westat, who hosted the survey on their server. The healthcare professional, the professional practice organizations, announced the survey on their websites, and then provided a link, which if a person clicked on it, then they went to the survey on the Westat server. And And if an individual couldn't finish their survey in one sitting, they were given a special number, and then they could go back, re-enter the survey, their own survey. So it really worked out. It was pretty slick. We launched the survey in 2011, and we had an 8-week data collection period. I think for the most part, most of the surveys were completed in the first 4 weeks of the survey, and then we wanted more people, and we kind of opened it up to people beyond the healthcare, these professional practice organizations, but that response wasn't as high as we thought it would be. So this just gives you, I'm not going to give you the results of all these studies, but this gives you a sense of who participated. We had 12,000 people who were eligible for participation. Almost 11,000 participants completed the core module, which made me sad because I really like to see what our respondents look like. But that wasn't too bad. It was about 90%. We had most of the respondents were to the hazard modules on surgical smoke from electrosurgery, followed by high-level disinfectants. And you would think that would be very high because lots of people use high-level disinfectants, and followed by the anesthetic gases. More than half of the respondents were nurses, followed by much lower percentages of other types of occupations. So I'm giving you the study conclusions. Like I said, we have done analysis on all the hazard modules, and plus we have several other papers that include data on the hazard modules, but kind of looking tangentially at other things. But we had a number of conclusions based on these analyses. One is that the web-based approach really works for healthcare workers. These are a web-savvy population, and they're very hard to reach. So we didn't have any sense that we could get them without going to the web. So that was the approach. And what we found, sort of conclusion from the other part of the study, is that adherence to the recommended guidelines and best practices are not universally adhered to, either on the side of the employer or the employee. And so our conclusions were, and we put this in all of our papers, that both the employers and the employees need to take responsibility for following these voluntary guidelines to ensure that the precautionary measures are implemented 100%. That might be radical from somebody who really is into occupational health, but I think, you know, when we started looking at this, we thought, oh, geez, everybody needs to participate. So, as all studies, there are limitations. Again, this is a targeted, non-probabilistic sample, so therefore we don't have the full sample of healthcare workers in this country, and there are somewhere between 14 and 16 million workers in healthcare alone. The study population was limited to the professional members of the professional practice organizations. All of the information is self-reported and not validated, but in my opinion, if you have 200, 300, 500 people from all over the country answering the questions the same way, telling you the same story, there's got to be some information, valid information in there. And then again, generalizability, but I think it helps us to, you know, to pinpoint some issues. This study does have strengths, regardless of the limitations. One is the largest cross-sectional survey of healthcare workers that looked at adherence to exposure controls. It had a national reach. We got people from all over the country, and we had a diverse set of respondents and workplaces because we were looking for them. We also think that this study provides us with valuable resource for assessing adherence to these guidelines, and it also provides valuable insight into the barriers to using exposure controls, both from the worker side and from the employer side. And despite the limitations, we really need to do some more training, we need to do some more interventions, and that these breaches in safe working practices really cannot be ignored in general. So I just want to acknowledge that we had a project team that was par excellent. Jim Buono is a PI, and as well as Andrea Stege, Scott Henn, Sharon Silver, Rebecca Tai, took it upon themselves to analyze and publish on some of the hazard modules. Our Westat contractor was really quite good. And Dr. Mick Cooper from the University of Michigan provided invaluable assistance in terms of doing web-based surveys, because we hadn't really done it before.